We arrived on scene. Patient was sitting on his front porch, 63-year-old male. He was being assessed by fire. He was on a non-rebreather. Initial vitals, pulse ox was 80% on room air. He was on 15 liters non-rebreather. Patient appeared to be in mild distress. Good equal chest rise and fall. Point of shortness of breath times 2 days. Vitals were assessed. He had to have a history of CHF. He appeared, color was good. He was ANO times 4. Heart rate was anywhere from 165 to about 180. No history of AFib. For us, with 15 liters, he was 96%, 97%.
This is C3 atrial fibrillation. So this is actually a real case, and it's a really good example of something that we see all the time in the emergency department. And we're going to work through this case together. How's that sound, Stuart?
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic. You've already piqued my interest. And this particular AFib patient's pretty sick. It sounds like he's having trouble breathing. And I should point out to everyone that on 15 liters of oxygen, he's still only sitting 96%. And we really expect people with that much oxygen to get up to 100%. And so you think this guy's not only in AFib, but he's in pretty bad heart failure, too.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with him. So we're going to gather more history from him, and we're going to work through that case with the residents as we go through the episode to help highlight some of the major learning points. But AFib is a really important topic. You know, we see it all the time. It's very complex. There are so many things to think about.
It's by far the most common arrhythmia that we treat in emergency medicine. I mean, this is bread and this is butter if I ever saw it, right?
Yeah. And it's really important because patients with AFib are at increased risk for stroke and they have a higher mortality. Actually, it's double that of patients who live in a sinus rhythm at baseline.
Yeah. And today we're going to talk about AFib as a primary presentation, but don't forget that it plays a role in so many of the other really serious things that we see. I mean, someone comes in with a cold, pulseless extremity, the first thing we think is, hey, I wonder if this is AFib with the clot that's been thrown off. So we talk about it more as a primary entity, but don't forget it. It basically is significant across all kinds of diagnoses.
Right. So for this episode, the things that we're going to focus on, first, we're going to cover history, exam, ECG findings, and the workup for AFib. Then we're going to talk about management. And this is where the meat and potatoes is. We're going to go into rhythm control and rate control and when and why you should look into both of those options.
And of course, anticoagulation.
Got to talk about that.
The other important issue. And, you know, no one knows what to do with these patients because there's so much confusion out there. So we'll try to give some fairly straightforward disposition guidelines at
the end. Hopefully, yeah. So there are some really common misunderstandings, especially for newer learners. So what do you think, Stuart, are the top things that people tend to not know off the bat?
Okay, I think to be fair, what are the top 10 things that you, Stuart, didn't know? Because, you know, we've all got things. There's always things where it's like, you know, you're 20 years in, you're like, really? That's what that means, you know? But I would say that, you know, across the most of us, there's a lot of confusion out there about the risk of stroke from converted AFib.
Let me just jump in here for a second and do a little bit more clarification, not because I need to, but because what else am I going to do? I'm standing here listening to this thing, smoking a cigarette, doing nothing. So atrial fibrillation, common, gets more common as you get older. Atrial fibrillation is where you've got lots of different foci, hundreds, thousands of foci firing in the atrium instead of a normal coordinated sinus beat that comes from up in the SA node and spreads through the atrium and then goes down into the ventricles. You get a normal contraction with that. With atrial fibrillation, it's firing all over the place. And so the atrium is like a bag of worms just jiggling around. So that reduces your cardiac output, and that means it makes things like CHF worse. But it also can produce clots. Blood likes to flow, and when it's not flowing, it will clot. And so atrial fibrillation patients are at risk for clots, particularly in this sort of thing called the left atrial or right atrial appendage. So we're worried when we put these patients back into sinus rhythm that if they've created a clot, and now we get that atrium contracting again properly, then that clot will flick off and go down into their belly or up into their brain. It'll be bad. So that's why there's always this discussion about the risk of having a clot when you convert people in atrial fibrillation. Okay, does that make sense? Does that put a bow on it? More, Stuart.
So a lot of people think that the risk of stroke is just when we zap them, just when we apply electricity and convert them. We should not forget that if you use a drug to convert the patient, like amiodarone or Sotalol or something like that, they have an equal risk of stroke being converted. And even if they spontaneously convert,
right?
You know, if they've been AFib for months and then they spontaneously convert, they also have that increased risk of stroke. And so that, I think, is a really big misunderstanding.
Yeah, and I think everyone thought that, like, just the shock itself is what's causing some sort of embolism. But it's not that. It's that they're back in sinus rhythm and some clot that was already there can now embolize, regardless
exactly.
of how they got to
exactly.
back into sinus.
It's exactly, you know, getting people back into sinus is not a bad thing. You know, it's in many ways good for the patient, but that risk of stroke does go up when we do that, regardless of how it happens.
So that's a really good one. But what else do you think is another common misunderstanding?
Oh, for sure. One of the biggest things that is confusing for people is which of the drugs control rate and which of the drugs actually convert the patients.
Yes.
And the reason it's so confusing is because all the drugs are called antiarrhythmics.
Right.
But for the sake of the discussion, probably it's better to think about nodal blockers,
mm-hmm.
which are going to control the rate. And so those are beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, digoxin. These are the three things that we traditionally use to control rate.
Rate, yeah.
They don't convert patients.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're having this discussion about is it safe to convert the patient or mm-hmm. not safe mm-hmm. to convert the patient, it's not a risk to control the rate with those nodal blockers. They don't convert the patient. They
right.
don't carry that risk. But other drugs like amiodarone and sotalol, which are actually antiarrhythmics that can stop the AFib
mm-hmm.
to a really significant extent, those are antiarrhythmic. And so we really need to be clear when we're giving a drug. Are we controlling the rate here, or are we actually trying to convert the rhythm? Because there's an extra risk associated with converting the rhythm.
Right.
And actually, there's this huge controversy about whether you should even bother converting patients with atrial fibrillation back into sinus rhythm. Because most people want to go back into atrial fibrillation. It's kind of a very stable rhythm. It likes to go there. And over time, long term, there's really no good study that show you actually do better by putting people back into sinus rhythm versus just controlling their rate. It's the rate with atrial fibrillation that's the problem, that this sort of jiggly worm thing is firing off lots of foci and you get these very high rates initially, but also when you start to exercise and anything else, even if you've had it for a long time, your rate goes up and you don't feel very good. So there is this controversy, so you'll hear it all the time, rate control versus rhythm control. No good evidence that putting people back into sinus rhythm long-term results in better outcomes, but a lot of people now sort of feel like give people a chance to go back into sinus rhythm because a lot of patients who are in atrial fibrillation complain it just feels weird and they don't like it. And if you just control their rate by slowing down that AV node, you have to be on anticoagulation long-term because of the clot problem we talked about. And that's a problem if you're falling over, if you're getting bonked on the head. And a lot of people don't want to be on blood thinners long-term. So that's why there is this controversy of rate control versus rhythm control. The patients generally want to be in sinus rhythm, but it's hard for us to show that they actually do better long-term.